Most fast food places use complex algorithms to come up with combos, but that tastes even more boring than it sounds. With my new sourdough bacon ranch combo, we simply figured out how to get all that flavor into one combo. It comes with my delicious full-size sourdough bacon ranch on toasted sourdough bread, hot and salty fries, and 100 plus drink choices for just $4.99. Class dismissed. The sourdough bacon ranch combo for $4.99 at Jack in the Box. Combo's done my way. For a limited time only at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Jaden Sterling, international best-selling author of The Alchemy of True Success. And thanks so much for tuning in to Soul to Profit Radio, bringing business to spirituality and spirituality to business. Each show, we are committed to helping you, our enlightened audience, discover your purpose, share your gifts, and monetize your message. Life is short, so let's get started.
Hello and welcome to my loyal listeners and to the new listeners joining us from around the globe to Soul to Profit Radio, where we share tips and strategies to assist you in filling your soul and your wallet. Before I introduce my fantastic guest today, I want to thank Jules Johnson, the founder of Law of Attraction Radio Network, for having me speak on the Wealth Creation Cruise last week. It was fantastic. We left from Boston and we traveled up the coast to Canada, and I really enjoyed meeting so many new people and also enjoyed sharing the stage with people whose work I've admired for years. And that was an amazing experience for me, and at times it was actually a bit surreal. And I say that because as I was on stage, you know, I'm speaking with Elliot Tanzer and Harrison Klein and Constance Arnold and Marbeth Dunn and people of that really high caliber who I've always enjoyed their work throughout, you know, the many, many decades of my life. And you know, I'm standing on stage with them and I was thinking, this is amazing, because when I was 14 years old, I actually had a knowing deep within me that I would be speaking on stage and sharing success tips with audiences. So now, 30 years later, my vision is coming true. And so I want to say to those of you who feel like, you know, you feel at times like your purpose is taking a long time to unfold, just please hang in there and stay the course. Trust the process and also take practical steps every day for your vision to unfold. And I want to talk a little bit about taking those practical steps, because I think it's important to take daily action towards your goals. And this image came to mind for me as I was writing the outline for the show, and that was an image of a triathlon. And as you know, there are three legs to a triathlon. The first is the swimming part, the second is the biking, and the last portion is running. And then I thought, you know, every day we do a success triathlon, and there are three components to that as well. And the first one is people, which reminded me of the swimming part, because you have to be in the flow, you know, in the energetic flow of meeting people in order for your business to expand. So that brought to mind the image of the swimming. And the second part, which is the biking of a typical triathlon, I thought of the word opportunities. Because opportunities can be like any sort of event, such as biking, where you can leverage opportunities. You know, in biking, oftentimes you can use less resources and what's called drafting, as long as it's allowed in certain triathlons. A lot of them allow this. So it's using less effort on your part in order to go further, you know, further in the distances. And that's what opportunities do for your business, is they allow you to move your business forward in a very powerful way if they're leveraged. And I'll talk about that a bit later. And the last part in any triathlon is the running part, and it reminded me of money. Because the reality is, if you do the first things really well, which is you create a network of people and you then leverage your opportunities, well, frankly, you're going to end up running all the way to the bank. So today I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the first component of the success triathlon, which is people. Then on upcoming shows, I'll talk about the other two components. So get a piece of paper out and a pen and take some notes. I think this will be really helpful for you. If you desire to grow your business and expand your influence, it's important to make new connections with people who you like and respect. And I say this because the reality is, in order to make these new connections or to get to really utilize those connections, it's important to bring value to the people first, rather than going into, you know, a lot of people go into networking meetings with the mindset that they're going to get other people to do things for them. And that's really not the way to build a solid relationship. The way to do that is in any networking situation or in any situation where you're meeting new people is ask them, you know, look, I really enjoy your work. You can say to them, I enjoy your work. I like what you're doing. You know, how can I help you share your message with more people? Or how can I help bring your message to my listening audience? Because what you can offer someone is different ears, you know, more people for them to hear their message. And that is really invaluable. So there's this law, you know, and I talk a lot on my show about the law of attraction and law of manifesting, and there's a law called the law of reciprocity. And that simply states, you know, how you, when you help other people get what they want, they too will help you get what you want. So as you're meeting people every single day and you're showing up at networking meetings or you're making new connections online or connecting with other people through other contacts, ask them the simple question, you know, how can I help you grow your business? And then you can feature them in your blog posts. You can feature people on your radio show, in your newsletter, on your social media pages, and eventually that person's going to come back around and say, hey, you know, you've been such a help to me. Thank you so much. How can I help you? So that's the first component of our success triathlon is people, how to utilize that tremendous resource that can literally change your business overnight and then focus on being of service to them. All right, and on my future shows, I'll talk about the second component of the success triathlon, which is opportunities. And today, let's bring on my amazing, fantastic guest, Sharon Saylor. Sharon is a sought-after speaker, an in-demand consultant, and best-selling author who works with CEOs, senior executives in world-leading companies, as well as with driven small business owners and rising star entrepreneurs. So she works with the best of the best. Sharon's expertise has been featured in major media, including Fox Business News, Prevention Magazine, Reader's Digest, the Miami Herald, and also one of my favorite publications, Investor's Business Daily. Sharon has also been featured in Women Entrepreneur and also Monster.com. So she has tremendous experience, and she has so generously agreed to come on the show and share with you, our listeners, some really important tips and strategies. So Sharon, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Well, we are really happy to have you, and I've been reading through your book, What Your Body Says and How to Master the Message, which, by the way, I love. I love all the tips and strategies, and I know our listeners will love reading your book as well. And Sharon, I learned a lot about, you know, which prior to reading your book, I had sort of intuitively known these things were important, but I had never read a book that really pointed out the tips, you know, what facial expressions to do, hand gestures and body language and voice inflection. And it really amazes me how much of these truly affect our ability to communicate effectively.
Oh, absolutely. I think too many of the body language books focus on reading other people, which we all do intuitively, and it's good to be able to do that. However, if we're sending awkward messages or completely messages that are destroying what we're wanting to say, it's no value to be reading the other person if they're interpreting what we're saying as something hostile or just completely incongruent with our verbal message. I recently did a PR press release about a Time magazine cover I saw that had Sheryl Sandberg on it, and her body language pose was completely incongruent with her message in Lean In. And I'll tell you, talk about manifesting. It ended up in over 300 media outlets just because of talking about the importance of the message being congruent with your body language.
Yeah. So what you're saying is be aware of your personal message, nonverbal as well as verbal communication that you're giving off to people. Is that the first thing?
Absolutely, because people will believe the nonverbal first. So if you are doing all sorts of things that might have people wondering if you're judging them, labeling them, any sorts of things like that, and yet verbally you're saying, no, I'm fine, I'm okay. How many times have we ever went to a friend or a spouse and said, are you fine? And you hear this, I'm fine. You know very well that they're not fine.
Yeah.
So we believe the nonverbals first.
All right, so nonverbals, and that is, are you referring to, like we've all heard, a defensive posture is arms crossed, right, across the chest, like that's not an open posture. Are there other things that you're referring to?
Well, interesting that you bring up crossed arms. Yes, it can mean that, but we have to look for the pattern. The entire pattern. I have an injured shoulder, and so I often cross my arms because it relaxes that shoulder muscle. Doesn't mean that I'm closed. So if you walked in the door right now and I was smiling and saying something like, oh, Jaden, hi, happy to have you here, you wouldn't be thinking I was closed, even though my arms are crossed across my chest. So we have to look at the entire pattern that someone's doing. If they have their arms crossed across their chest, their feet are facing away from you, like trying to plan an escape route, so they're pointed to the left or to the right, not towards you.
Right.
Maybe they're frowning or there's a little bit of a scowl. So it's a whole pattern we have to look for.
I agree. So when as we talk about nonverbal clues and verbal communications to promote success, because, we title the show, Is Your Body Language Harming Your Success or Helping It? What are a couple things that people can do starting today to become not only aware of their body language, but then also to incorporate into their, daily routine of, meeting these new people at networking meetings? Like, what would you suggest?
Oh, great question. I first suggest really listening. I have a lot of clients come into my office and they say things like, people always say I'm angry, or people always say I'm critical. And then they go, I'm not. And they just dismiss it as if it has no meaning. They may not be critical. They may not be judgmental. They may not be angry. But their nonverbals are giving that impression. Recently, I had a wonderful woman come into the office, and she said, my boss has just had it with me. He says I'm always judging his ideas. And it was her position to implement these ideas. Well, she is very process systems oriented, meaning she loves everything step by step by step. She is the ideal assistant to this person because this person, her boss, is a high risk taker who doesn't even consider consequences or steps. So you can see how they're the perfect match, except she was about to get let go because he felt that she was always judging. What she was doing was the minute he started into one of his ideas, she would go internal. So that's kind of the eyes glaze over. She would sort of lean forward because she was thinking so hard. You can just kind of imagine this. Maybe do it with me. You're leaning forward just a smidge. Mm-hmm. You're squinting a little bit and furrowing your eyebrows down and pursing your lips just a little bit. And you can see that whole pattern would lead you to believe the person was judging you. It flashes me back to my third grade teacher. The only difference was she used to look out over her glasses, that same face. But you can see how there was this disconnect. What she was doing was she went internal so deep. Okay, how am I going to do this? I want to do a good job. Oh, my goodness, what are the steps? She was listening, but she was internal, writing her own list. Now, the way we solved it was twofold. I said, tell the boss what you're doing. Tell him, don't take it personal. I'm sorry I make this face when I'm thinking. I'm wanting to do a good job. Second,
I like that.
Take in a notepad.
Yep.
And write those steps down, because the physical act of writing kept her from going internal. It kept her external. She had to listen, and the physical act of writing kept her external. So those were the two tricks that completely smoothed that conflict in that relationship.
And that's powerful, because you're letting the other person know, and I love how you said that. Say to the other person who you're communicating with, look, this isn't about you. This is my way of processing. And so then they're not taking it personally. And then they're able to be more open with their ideas, because they're not feeling judged. They're just going, oh, that's the other person's way of processing. I really like that. And that's okay to do in business, right? Business, personal, whatever kind of relationship.
Oh, absolutely. I say we have to understand the difference between sharing too much, but I'm a big advocate of probably about 90% of the time mentioning the elephant in the room. You know, a wonderful little side story to that. She called me a few days later and said I saved her marriage, because she went home and told her husband, Sharon says I make this face, and I'm really just thinking. And he said, that's the face that I keep telling you. You know, you're being critical of all my good ideas, too. So,
right.
Absolutely. Mention the elephant in the room. Now,
yeah.
You have to be aware that you're making that face, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, in order to change it. But it sounds like was she not aware of it until she came to you?
No.
And you said, oh, okay.
That's so funny. She'd heard for years and years, stop being critical, stop being judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And she is not either of those, so it just she had no clue. We don't know that we make those faces unless someone tells us. You see, to her, those were labels, and she knew she wasn't judgmental. She knew she wasn't critical, and those labels were just having her so confused. And when I explained, look, this is the label, and I took a short video of her doing it, said, look, here, watch this video. The minute she watched the video, she was like, oh, my gosh, I would think that person was critical and judgmental as well.
Exactly, you know, but oftentimes it's really challenging for us to watch ourselves on video or to hear an audio that we did. I mean, I know I force myself now to watch myself on video and listen to audios, and so that I can, you know, improve what I'm doing to communicate more effectively. But I've often even heard actors say they can't watch themselves in movies.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, you're a coach, I'm a coach, we all do this kind of work, and I say that really the ultimate act of self-awareness, how I really define that, is courage. Anytime we have to be self-aware, we have to have the courage to go, I may or I may not really be happy with what I find out about me right now. But the cool thing about having that courage to find out what's happening right now is, as soon as I know, I have the ability to change it.
Yeah.
When we don't know, nothing will change.
Good point. So then, do you look to the results? Like, I often, you know, talk with people about, asking them, what kind of results are you getting? And if you're not really getting the results that you want, like, for instance, the success that you want with your business, you then have to evaluate what's happening. And it seems a lot of our success is reliant on our ability to communicate effectively. Do you find that also?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. And I also want to put a little asterisk, communicate with ourselves as well, being honest with ourselves. Oftentimes in the entrepreneurs and the business leaders I coach, they do have blind spots about where they're refusing to look, where they're refusing to say, okay, my business is doing great except for this one little part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the part we need to look at. What are we avoiding seeing?
Yeah, that's big. So what you said earlier was start with yourself and your nonverbals, right? Like, what is your body language? And can you explain to our listening audience what nonverbal communication is?
Well, nonverbal communication, body language is a subset of nonverbal communication. Nonverbal communication is anything, really. A chair can communicate to us in a room. It's, you know, its location, the placement of it, always choosing. In a large office, have you ever gone into an office and there's a couch or a chair? Always choose the chair if you're negotiating for power and success. And I don't, power is not a bad word. Some people think that's a terrible word. It's not a bad word. But never sit on a couch. That's nonverbal communication. Because in a big office where you're negotiating, a couch is a subordinate piece of furniture. So see, it's not just about our body language, my arms across the chest. It's the location you choose to sit at the conference table says a lot about your hierarchy in the negotiations. So being strategic and understanding the information that's available to us all just by understanding how someone enters the room, where they choose to sit, how they sit. So it's even more than just, you know, smiling, direct eye contact.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and that's what I loved about your book, because you really go into detail about all of the important points of communication, nonverbal and verbal. And I love the diagrams in here because it shows, you know, certain hand positions. And so when let's say you're at a networking meeting and you're meeting someone for the first time, what is the most optimal way to present yourself so that people know you're friendly, open, and, you know, wanting to get to know them or to do business with them?
Oh, great question. So many places to go. I would say first, be strategic with your smile, meaning some people walk into a networking event with that look of, you know, that smile, the Joker plastered across their face, you know, just grinning the whole time. That doesn't show you're intelligent. It shows you're nervous. You want to look intelligent. So you walk in with what I call a neutral face. You're not frowning. You're not smiling. It's just a neutral face. You make direct eye contact with people, and you strategically choose who you want to talk to. Maybe you know that there are specific people there. Talk to them first to make sure you get time with them. But once you choose someone to talk to, maintain that neutral face. Go up, do a good handshake, a firm handshake. It's not squeezing, it's not pulling or anything like that. And have a small smile, but it gets bigger, and the climax of the smile should be when they say their name.
Okay.
Everyone loves to hear their name, and when someone smiles, when they say, "Hi, my name is Sharon," and Jaden, all of a sudden your smile gets really big at hearing my name.
Right.
I know that smile was just for me.
Right. So I love that tip. Thank you for that. And, you know, a couple of things that you said, though, struck me. The first one is about to being what I'll call too smiley. And the person, like, I admire Richard Branson tremendously, and I follow his work, and I really like him. But the first thing that comes to mind when I think of him is his big smile. And it's always looks and feels genuine. So for someone who has that elevated level of success, you know, what is he doing differently that is working for him that is not being interpreted as, I think, what did you say? It was too weak, or
Oh, it can be a sign of nervousness if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Branson, first, by his status alone, we all know he's quirky, so the elephant in the room is we all know he's quirky, so it's okay.
Okay.
By his, you know, everyone knows who he is, so we're like, oh, yeah, well, that's just him. No different than me standing with my arms crossed. However, he can walk into a room with that great big smile because he's confident. He walks in breathing, he walks in really, you know, everybody's going to like me. But I have found that that is a very unique skill set that most people don't have. Most people have some bit of angst or anxiety when they walk into a room full of strangers. And that's where I say be very strategic. Instead of having a forced fake smile like the Joker, it's better to maintain a neutral face and smile just when someone says their name, because that forced fake smile says, oh, my gosh, I'm terrified. Where Branson, he just strides into a room and he, you know, he's so confident the smile is genuine.
Yes, you're right. He lights up the room with his energy, and that makes good sense. Okay, so he's, because he is highly confident, he is able to sort of get away with that kind of
absolutely. That's, everybody knows. In fact, we would wonder if he didn't walk into the room smiling. That's sort of his baseline behavior that we all look for, that all of our friends know, and we'll say, oh, that's just Jaden, or that's just Sharon, that doesn't mean anything. When
mm-hmm.
we see him smiling, it doesn't mean anything. When he isn't smiling, then we begin to wonder, there is a difference. What's the difference about?
Yeah, and I've also heard, you know, smile with your eyes, so it's okay to let those crow's feet show, you know, really.
Absolutely.
Make it genuine, sincere, right? Like you're saying, not a plastered smile, but smile with the eyes and let it rip, so to speak.
Absolutely, because when it's a forced fake smile, you cannot engage the eyes. They don't automatically engage. So it just screams, I'm scared, I'm nervous. And people, unfortunately, the ones that will come up to talk to you are probably the ones you don't want to. They're the ones that are sympathetic and, oh, I hate these two. And you know.
Right.
Those are lovely, but they are probably not going to get you the business that you're out there looking for.
Good point. So let's talk about the other really important component that you mentioned, which is the handshake. I remember when I was, gosh, I think 6 years old, my grandfather taught me the importance of a good handshake and the importance of looking people in the eye. So I'll never forget the day that I stood in front of him and he said, okay, this is how you shake hands and you need to really look people in the eye. So I've never forgotten that. You know, he was president of a bank in Maryland, and he was the powerful man in charge, and he knew the importance of both of those, the eye contact and the handshake. And what I've learned over the years in business is that oftentimes men, women don't do this as much, but men will just, you know, they power up the handshake rather than, you know, and oftentimes like I've shaken hands with guys and my hand feels like I just got it crushed, you know, and the rest of the conversation I can't even focus on what they're saying because my hand's throbbing because they felt the need to shake it so hard. And I often tell people, you know, to really get a feel for the pressure with the handshake. So as someone is shaking your hand, be mindful of the amount of pressure they're putting into the palm of your hand, and match it. Don't elevate it. Don't go any more than that handshake, and don't go any less. But match the pressure, particularly when a man is shaking hands with a woman. Do you agree with that approach?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And if they're crushing your hand, you squeeze back. Especially if you're a guy. If you're a woman, you can get away with, that's a really powerful handshake. You
mm-hmm.
know, letting them know that your hand is getting crushed, for sure. But what that's about, oftentimes you'll see men trying to turn your hand under. It's an odd kind of feeling that they'll either try and turn your hand over, meaning their palm goes up, instead
okay.
of being side to side. The other power game, crushing, turning their hand up, and then pulling you in, is all a power game to find out where you are in the hierarchy of this room.
Wow.
If you don't allow your hand to be turned down, if you don't allow yourself to be pulled in, meaning you're ready for it, you just stay planted.
Mm-hmm.
Or you slightly, as you feel the person pulling you in, you pull back. They'll stop because all they're doing is testing. Okay, what is the power of this person? What is the hierarchy of this person? And whether you have status on the org chart or not doesn't matter. It's what you do with your body language. It's what you do with those nonverbals that people know. Yeah, I might be only here on the org chart, but I am going to be up there. And that shows them that you're ready to take on those positions.
Oh, that's powerful, powerful. So if you're tuning in, you're listening to Soul to Profit Radio. I'm your host, Jaden Sterling, and we've been talking with Sharon Saylor, the author of What Your Body Says and How to Master the Message, Inspire, Influence, Build Trust, and Create Lasting Business Relationships. So what a wonderful conversation. And let's talk about that last component, which is eye contact. You know, ever since my grandfather told me that, I have, you know, and that some people have even, like, have commented about, I have intense eye contact with people. I like to keep the contact. I like to keep the focus. And it also lets people know, hopefully, that I'm truly interested in what they're saying. But oftentimes I find people get a little nervous or they look away or they can't maintain eye contact. So should I be the one who at times, and I read it in your book, you know, at times just break the contact? And I'm learning how to do that a bit more, that I will look away so that someone is more comfortable in the conversation. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, twofold. Yes, direct eye contact is important. However, I say it's consistent, not constant. So this is not a stare down.
Mm-hmm.
Consistent allows for blinking. It allows for, you know, looking up to find something in your memory or looking down to find something in your memory. It absolutely is helpful, especially if you're talking about emotional things. Jaden, you have this magnificent power right to get to the heart of something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can be very emotional. What we want to do during those times is sometimes people might be starting a little tear or their face is getting a little emotional, they might need a break in the eye contact just to do what we call save face.
Okay.
So oftentimes when I see that starting to happen and their breathing is starting to get very shallow, I'll do some verbal pretext of, interesting, let me think about that for a minute, which, you know, there's nothing wrong to look down to think. Or giving a verbal pretext of, go on, tell me more. And then looking down for just a second to think.
Mm-hmm.
That allows them to breathe and that moment they need to recover.
Okay. So it's not constant, but was it consistent, that the word that you used?
Consistent,
okay.
Not constant. Because it can feel like a stare down. Interestingly, what happens with too much eye contact, the people that you don't do this, but we're just talking in extremes so people here, your community can understand, people who are just staring like it's drilling right through you, what happens is if it's two men talking together, that can activate the other person's fight or flight mechanism. So oftentimes if two men are in that really intense eye contact, not even blinking kind of thing, you'll
mm-hmm.
find that conflict is going to ensue very quickly. If it's a man and a woman, what happens? If it's the male staring at the woman gets incredibly uncomfortable and can actually say things like, you know, harassment.
Wow.
And things like that. And that's often what happens. It's a misunderstanding when the man goes, I wasn't harassing. It's the directness, the constant eye contact. Now,
mm-hmm.
if a woman and a man are talking and it's the woman who does the direct drilling eye contact, it's equally misunderstood as being flirtatious and interested.
Wow, okay. So, and then how about the flip side? When someone can't even give eye contact, what do you think about that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll say most often, I'm never a fan of the word always and never, but there again, I said never a fan. I'm not a fan of always and never. But most often, it's a safety issue. Now, we might be very safe. We might be very comfortable. We might know the entire environment is safe. But sometimes people who are more shy or less self-confident have this feeling that they have to look away or look down to even be able to speak to someone. Maybe they have you, for whatever reason, up on a pedestal, or they have some other thing going on that's them. It's usually not about you. It's a personal thing. So it's incumbent on us, the listener, if it's an important conversation to us, to continue to use words of encouragement like, and a slight little nod. This creates permission and safety.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we want to do is also understand that, like I said before, it's not about us. It's about them. So we just, oftentimes it's not appropriate for us to, you know, get, they're looking down, and for us to bend our knees and look up and say, oh, can we make eye contact? You know, we just have to learn to get comfortable with it ourselves. I have an acquaintance I know never come to me for counseling and coaching, even though I could see some things that could help, but who talks most often with their eyes closed.
Right, right.
Yeah. And this is about the ability to feel comfortable and safe talking to people. They need to close their eyes.
Wow.
So knowing that it's not about us, that it's a safety issue, it's a personal comfort issue, it's easier for us to be comfortable with that. Because when somebody's not looking at us, it can feel really dismissive. It can really feel like we're not important. But when we understand really it's about them feeling safe, it's a completely different way to look at it.
I like that. That is a great way to look at that and to reframe it a bit. And so let's say we are talking with, we just meet someone who has that, you know, that ability or that non-ability to give us eye contact. The way to make them feel comfortable is it to match them and not necessarily look into their eyes as well? I mean, are you looking over their shoulder? Or are you, like, what do you suggest with that?
I suggest the consistent but not constant eye contact, maintaining yourself, you know, your good eye contact, maintaining yourself in that you're continuing to breathe just comfortably low and slow. If it warrants it, you might even want to breathe slower, because what that will do, there's a process called mirroring and matching, and if we breathe slower, over a period of a few minutes, their breathing will slow down. They will begin to feel more comfortable. The faster you breathe, the more your fight or flight mechanism is activated. So if we can slow down someone's breathing by us continuing to slow our breathing down, including extending the exhale longer than feels natural to you, because that's where the body relaxes, within just a couple of minutes, the other person will begin to mirror and match you, and they won't know why, but they go, gosh, I always feel so comfortable around Jaden. And it's because you are managing their metabolism by the way you're breathing and your own comfort level.
That's remarkable and so simple. Like you say, I mean, just so then it really does come back to awareness of what we're doing in our communication and slowing, like you're saying, slowing down the breathing, extending the exhale to allow everyone around us to feel comfortable. So what if we meet someone who is the opposite of that, someone who is more a little higher energy, more fully engaged? Would we also match their energy as well?
I'll say yes and no. Sometimes I meet people and there's no way I can maintain that energy.
Right.
If you can, fabulous. A lot of times it feels great to go up there at that high energy. However, if you go, wow, this person is fascinating, I want to have a longer conversation with them, but there's no way I can maintain this energy level, what you do is you match them up there and you slowly come back to your own natural pace. And you'll notice they begin to follow you.
Okay. Excellent. And, you know, Sharon, we promised our listeners, particularly our introverted listeners, ways to become networking dynamos. So can you give, you know, because I think well, I don't know. I can't, like you say, make a sweeping comment about everyone has that part of them. But I know within myself I'm probably more introverted than extroverted. And what would you say to people like me and our listeners who are introverted, who do want, you know, to still reach out to people? And, we know we need to network and that kind of thing for our success.
Well, I'm joining the club of introverted. I give whole new meaning to that word, introverted. So I've learned a lot of interesting strategies over the years. The first one I suggest is if you're going to an event where you know who some of the people are, and by that I mean maybe you don't know them, ever met them, but you know who they are, research them beforehand. It's so easy to research people on the Internet today. Just look at Google and find a couple of things that are interesting. Maybe you grew up in a neighboring town and you can say, oh, I didn't know you were from Beaverton, or you went to a similar school, or my goodness, you went to an all-girls school, so did I. So you have conversation starters.
Okay, great.
Now, if you don't have time to research people, I suggest always going using the intro line of the what is it. Find something fascinating about them, whether it's an interesting tie, a lovely brooch, even maybe a unique haircut. Whatever it is, say, and go up and give them a compliment and say, my goodness, what a fascinating brooch. Where did you ever find such a thing? And people love to talk about themselves. So anytime you can ask a question that first off is that what we say open-ended, not yes or no, and make sure that it's something that they'll talk about. If they're wearing a very unique tie, of course they put it on for a purpose. They didn't put it on to be ignored. If they're wearing a very lovely, unique piece of jewelry, of course, they bought it or they inherited it or whatever. They're wearing it because it has a story behind it. And people love to tell stories about themselves.
Exactly. So open up with an icebreaker, but yet, you know, some people might hear that and say, well, you know, that would feel intrusive. Like, what am I intruding in on, you know, is that personal? So you're saying pick something that someone intended to get a desired effect, which is a comment or, you know, something like that, and then ask about that as opposed to something that might be more personal.
Absolutely. And if all else fails, walking up to a person, here, if you're very afraid and a little nervous, go ahead and do a smile, a little bit of a smile. We don't want you looking like Joker to where the lips are shaking because you're so nervous. But just a little bit of a smile. And as soon as someone makes eye contact with you, smile back very big.
Mm-hmm.
And if they smile back at you, it's an open invitation that they want to talk.
Okay.
So just know that the minute you get eye contact, give them a flash, a big smile. If they smile back, walk up and say, hi, my name's Sharon. What brought you here today? Or just, hi, my name is Sharon, and wait for them to say, hi, my name's Jaden. Well, Jaden, what brought you here today?
Mm-hmm. I like that. What brought you here today?
It's a fun way. It's not as intrusive. Sometimes I suggest tell me about yourself. But people are like, where do I start? Do you want to know about my dog? Do you want to know about my failed marriage? Or do you want to know about my job?
Exactly. Where do you start? So that's good. That's a pointed question, a focused question to get people that's non-intrusive, that gets people to open up a bit. And so what you're saying is that will alleviate nervousness for the other person.
Oh, absolutely. And alleviate your nervousness because they are having to do the talking. So
right.
As an introvert, introverts love to listen. We love to go deep into a conversation with someone. Extroverts love people, I kind of think of them as the bumblebees of the society, where they kind of get to just a certain depth of conversation and they're done. They're on to the next and then on to next. An introvert, you'll see, will sit down at a networking event and have an incredibly deep conversation or two, depending on the length of the event, and then the introvert and the extrovert walk out and they'll go, so they both had wonderful times. And the extrovert, well, yes, and I met 35 people. And the introvert will begin to tell them the entire life story of one or two people.
Right. So let's talk about that. Is it a matter of, because, it, you know, there's, to show up at a networking meeting and the objective is to meet multiple people, not just, like you say, know the life stories of one or two people. So do you suggest getting out of, an introvert getting out of their comfort zone and then so that they extend themselves to more than one or two people, right? I mean, wouldn't that be a way to have a successful networking meeting, or what do you suggest?
For the most part, yes. Step out of your comfort zone and meet as many people as possible. In fact, beforehand, set a goal. Maybe you're new to it. I want to meet 5 people tonight. Maybe you've done it a couple of times. I'm going to up that to 10 tonight. However, be strategic. If you get lucky and you meet someone and you're like, man, this person can introduce me, or this person is the person I need to talk to about, go ahead, have a longer conversation with them. You want to develop that relationship with that person. If you meet at the event and you're like, wow, you know, this person and I really are, I don't want to say hitting it off in a sort of a friendship way, because you're there for business. You're there for business most often. But you're going, wow, this person and I, you know, we both have the same connections and it sounds like we could really do some business together. Stay and have that deep conversation. But if you've met someone, you've had a short conversation and made interesting notes on the back of their business card about them, just go, you know, I'd love to follow up with you tomorrow. Does 10 a.m. work? Or I'd love to follow up with you. Does Tuesday work? And absolutely set a time. Don't just say, I'll follow up with you sometime. If you met this person and you're like not sure and it just doesn't feel right to go deeper, set a time. Make sure, yeah, let's talk at 10 a.m. Tuesday. Too often, it's so easy just to leave an event and say, yeah, I'll call you. Or the other person goes, yeah, I'll email you. And they never do.
Exactly. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I like that. So as you're, and this is with people who you want to get to know further, or you feel there's a resonance there that you can end up doing business with this person.
Right. Introverts tend to be too nice, and they listen. This is going to sound harsh, but true. They listen to people that really aren't there to benefit their business. They listen, they're empathetic, they get engaged, way too engaged, and then the whole night goes by, and the only reason that you went to this event was, let's say, to find more people to market to, or to find the 2 people that can introduce you to someone else. You know, whatever the reason you went to that event was, introverts often will sit down and are too nice, and they'll just get engaged with one person, and it's not going to help them. There's nothing wrong in wanting to advance your business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with cutting a conversation short and coming up with a verbal pretext of saying, you know, Meg, it was so nice to meet you here. I had promised that I need to meet someone over there, Ted over there. You know, thank you very much for sharing a conversation with me. Then get up and leave. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I know a lot of us will feel guilty and like, oh my goodness. You know, that's about that. They have to learn to take care of themselves just like you learn to take care of yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. You're there for a purpose. And in business, if we're not focusing on that purpose, we never make the money. And all too often I find people think that there's something wrong with money, but money is what keeps us in business.
Exactly. It's the third part of that success triathlon. So in your book, can you spend a couple minutes talking about something that I know I have struggled with in the past, and I still catch myself even to this day, and many, many people who I work with, and that is, you wrote a section on people being addicted to verbal pause. And in Toastmasters, we used to call those verbal pauses crutch words, and for every time we used a crutch word when we gave a talk, we had to pay a dime into a jar. And, you know, so then we started to catch ourselves using these crutch words, which are, as you defined, as the ums, ahs, uhs, you knows, and, you know, other sounds like that. And it's really important to become aware of those and eliminate those. And you say that in your book, and I completely agree with you. So how do people do that?
I'm glad you brought that up. And no complaints about Toastmasters. I think it's a wonderful organization. However, they don't tell you why you're doing that. And until you know why you're doing it, you don't know how to stop it, other than to consciously catch yourself going, oh, I did an um. That's just
exactly.
A bit awkward. The
yeah.
reason you're umming and awing is you don't have enough oxygen to the brain, and your brain is making you and ah to force you to focus to breathe. An and an ah is an exhale. It's always said on an exhale. And it's forcing you that, okay, I'm going to make you exhale until you take in enough oxygen to my whole brain here. So if you're in a conversation and you find yourself umming, awing, you knowing more than you would like, stop, take a nice deep breath, maybe two, and start over. And you'll find the ums and ahs go away until you begin to hyperventilate again. Now, if you're worried about losing the mic, as I say, sometimes people worry they're going to lose the mic if they pause to breathe.
Right.
Hold a hand gesture out, meaning you've got to just you take your hand out, do a hand gesture, whatever it is, palm up, palm down, doesn't really matter. In this case, they both have different meanings, but in this case, doesn't really matter. Freeze it out there while you're gesturing, while you're breathing, because what that gesture says is, but wait, there's more. Now,
okay.
The other key component to know is it's in the silence, it's in the silent pause that we look most intelligent to other people.
That was big.
It's during that silent pause that the other person, the listeners, have the opportunity to catch up with what you're saying, to let it sink into memory. So especially when you come to those one or two points in your talk, whether it's a speech or just a networking event, and you want that to sink into them, maybe you're saying what you do or what you can help or how you can benefit someone, be silent. When you get to that point, say it, then be silent. Let it sink in.
So why are so many people uncomfortable with silence?
You know, that's a great question. I wish I knew why we were uncomfortable with it, but I'll tell you, people will jump in to fill it no matter what happens.
I know it.
And the best negotiator in the room is the one that learns to just be comfortable with silence. People absolutely abhor silence. So they will begin, if you're wanting to know more about a person, say something profound and then just shut up. They'll start to spill the beans. They'll tell you stories you had no idea about just because they hate silence as much as the next person.
Mm-hmm. Wow, Sharon, that is remarkable. And it's so true. If you really stop and think about that, there is so much power that comes from the silence. So let's encourage our listeners to be comfortable with the pauses and with silence.
Absolutely. And, you know, I find introverts are more comfortable with silence than extroverts. So all of the introverts in your audience out there, you know, give yourself a big pat on the back because you're halfway there. You're already comfortable with silence.
I like that. It's so true. So it's just becoming, it's being aware of the times to be silent and doing it in a way that, like you're saying, will allow for the message to sink in, will allow for the listeners to catch up to what you're saying, and it gives you a little bit of a break.
Absolutely. Just being strategic with your communication is the main part. Now, I want to put a little asterisk there. You don't have to be strategic 100% of the time. I've had people say to me, well, I heard you say that, and it's driving me crazy. you know, when you're with family, with friends, just be yourself. It's only when it's a critical communication that you want to really be strategic on what's the meaning behind it.
Wonderful. And for people who, do you work with people over Skype? Is that, like, how do you work with a new, how do you bring a new client on, or how can someone start working with you?
Well, thank you for asking. Multiple ways. Whether it's live and in person is always fun. I have offices in Miami, Florida, and Portland, Oregon, as well as I go to events all over the world. People oftentimes, I come in early or stay late at events, like I'm going to be in Orlando in just a couple of days, is one way to work with me. The other way is, thank goodness for things like video Skype and Google Hangout. It doesn't have to be video. A lot of my clients, once we do a video and I get a feeling of their habits, their behaviors, we just can even do cell phone calls and chats, check-ins about things that are happening. Because I'm actually an executive coach with just a very unique skill set, and that's a deep mastery of nonverbal communication. So oftentimes we coach on way more than just body language. But that's always one that people need to know about. So it's a fabulous way. And for your listeners, I also have put together, if they go to Sharon Saylor, and my last name is spelled SAYLER.com/gift, they can get a wonderful ebook that I wrote on the 7 things nobody is telling you but you should know. And it's all about similar things that we talked about today that can absolutely harm sales and even kill your career.
Wow. Well, thank you for that generous gift to our listeners. I appreciate that. And will you say that one more time? It's
Sharon Saylor, and my last name is spelled S-A-Y-L-E-R, and it's only one R in Sharon, so SharonSaylor.com/gift, G-I-F-T.
Gift. Okay, terrific. And people can go there, they can download it. So once they give you their email, is it an instant download? Or how
it's
does that work?
It's an instant download, absolutely. They might get an email. The technology always baffles me at times. That's not my area of expertise. They might get an email that says, this is your first time here, thanks for visiting. You need to confirm that you really want to be on the email list, because I don't spam people, and
right.
I know, like, you don't either. You know, we both share that. That's an idea of, like, no, we only talk to those that really want to be part of our community. And then once they've confirmed, there, it's an instant download.
Fantastic. Well, Sharon, thank you for your time today and for sharing these wonderful ideas and strategies as to how people can master their nonverbal communication. And I'm going to recommend everyone, please buy Sharon's book. You can get it it's a hardback book. It's a beautiful book. Amazon.com. It's called What Your Body Says and How to Master the Message. It's about creating inspiring influence and building trust in business relationships. I highly recommend it. So check it out. She has some amazing tips in here. And thank you for writing this book, because I've really never seen a book like this. And is this why you wrote it? Because nothing is really out there that shows all these different ways of, looking at this hand placement, and it's wonderful to make people aware. So thank you for writing it. And everyone, please, you're welcome. I highly recommend Sharon's book and her work. And Sharon, would you come on the show again in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. And if your listeners have questions, they can reach out to me on Facebook, which is Sharon Saylor on Facebook, or LinkedIn, or even just there on my website, SharonSaylor.com. There's a contact page. And if they've heard something and need a little more clarification or a little what about, just drop me an email. And I'm happy to give you an answer, or reach out to me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter.
Wonderful. And they can reach you through all those places on your website, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Sharon, thank you again for your time. You're fantastic. I enjoyed the interview, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Go make it an adventuresome day.
Yes. Okay. Take care. All right, everyone. You heard it from Sharon Saylor. As you can tell, she's fantastic. She has some great ideas for all of us to get out and expand our network of people. As I mentioned,
phase of the success triathlon is people, and our next radio show I'll talk about phase two, which is opportunities, how to master the opportunities available to you. Please go to my Facebook page, which is Jaden Sterling's Wealth and Wisdom page, and click the like button. And it is on that page that I post free giveaways often, which include success tips and strategies. And to receive my free ebook, Your Destiny Delivered, A Guide to Discovering the Real You, is valued at $47. You can get it for free when you enter your email at jadensterling.com. That's jadensterling.com. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Soul to Profit Radio. Go out and make it an amazing week and do those things that fill your soul and your wallet. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Ah, the snooze button, our old friend. You've showed us patience, postponing the monotony of morning traffic, putting off the bland and boring breakfast for just 5 more minutes. Thank you for all you've done, but your services are no longer required. There is finally a breakfast worth waking up for. The triple cheese and hash brown breakfast burrito with provolone, cheddar, pepper jack, and a crispy hash brown. Taste it before it's gone at Jack in the Box. Limited time only at participating restaurants.